Hello, and welcome to another episode of Leadership Amplified. I'm Dr. Karen Morley, and I'm your host for the podcast. Now, leadership is only valuable if it's a resource for the organization. And one of the exciting things today about our guest, Duncan Phillips, is that he has embarked on a journey with the organization to increase just this kind of leadership. He's called it the Involving Leadership Program, and it is all about servant leadership, how to enable everyone at every level in the organization to lead, and how leadership can be a resource for the organization. And leadership is a resource for the organization when teams and individuals benefit from being led. So the podcast is designed to inspire you to get more impact with your teams, to promote inclusive leadership, and to show you how leadership can be more satisfying, and it certainly can. So a little bit more about Duncan Phillips. He has around 20 years experience in blue chip retail, and he has exceptional negotiation skills. Over the course of his career, Duncan has consistently delivered profitable growth to the businesses that he's worked for, and he's also helped to deliver impressive results for his supplier partners. So it's not all one way. He has strong business integrity, high levels of trust and partnership with peers and suppliers alike. He has great strength in sharing and communicating a vision and leading this through to successful delivery. Is a very positive leader. His specialties include innovation, project delivery, influencing leadership skills, startup businesses, commercial terms delivery, team management, and change management. As I said, he's the CEO of Terry White Chemmart, and he's been in that role for just over a year. He was chief operating officer prior to that, and he joined Chemmart, Terry White Chemmart, when it was Chemmart, as the executive director around 4 years ago. Prior to that, he had a number of roles at Coles, including as general manager merchandise for Coles Liquor and general manager merchandise for Coles Express and various other roles. Prior to that, he was in the UK working again in retail, and he started his career as a category manager for Dixon Stores Group. He has a Master of Arts in Theology and Philosophy from the University of Cambridge. Well, great. Welcome, Duncan. Thanks very much for joining me for this episode. It's a pleasure to have you here. Now, I've given a bit of an outline of your CV, but it would be great to hear from you about your leadership career and some of the career highlights and key leadership experiences that you've had.
Okay, well, thanks, Karen. Thanks for having me. So really my career, I'm in retail, have been for over 20 years now, currently run the Terry White Chemmart pharmacies. We've got about 450 pharmacies in Australia and growing. My career in retail was slightly unexpected in the sense that I studied theology and philosophy at university, which wasn't a natural vocational career into retail, but grew up with business around me, and was always interested in retail and commerce. So I left, when I left university, I looked for the first retail opportunity that I could, and entered into retail there in a buying assistant role. Just always found the customer and the negotiation and the sort of the results side of retail fascinating. That's sort of how I started and got into retail.
And I always think that's very interesting to hear that the study of theology and philosophy into retail. So is there anything in particular you would say about that study that really helped you, or that you kind of bring with you, keep with you in retail?
The thing that I think it's fair to say, when you leave university and start your career, you find it hard to adjust to what is quite a very stimulating level of kind of intellectual engagement to suddenly be doing fairly sort of basic and quite sort of automated tasks, and you know, keeping sort of discipline on fairly manual activities that you do within you know, a lot of first jobs that you do. For me, you know, as my career's progressed, where I've seen the benefits is that in a degree like theology, you're spending a lot of time having to digest a huge amount of information and then come up with your views, opinions, and be able to kind of articulate your position within that. And what I found is that those that I work with that sometimes have studied things like classics or theology or history or English, where there isn't a defined sort of route to an answer, I find that sometimes they're quite good at digesting a lot of information and being good at problem solving and lateral thinking, just because you do a lot of analytical things. There isn't a clear and obvious kind of route to an answer sometimes in those sort of degrees and subjects. So that's what I found. I'm quite good at thinking laterally, at being able to digest a lot of information and come up with where I think the right sort of route to go is, that might not have always be the most obvious sort of position.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like that's pretty useful for a CEO, particularly at this point in time.
Right now, it's very useful, yeah.
Yeah. So just back on the history, anything else in terms of your career, the leadership experiences? I mean, did you decide to be a leader at any point in time, or did that happen a little more organically?
I think I've always been ambitious and competitive. I'm very results driven, and you know, I remember the first week of arriving in my first job in London, sort of as a buying assistant, you know, looking at the trading director and thinking, you know, that's where I want to be before I'm 30, you know. And so I set this sort of, you know, I want to be a trading director by the age of 30. And that was sort of my sort of challenge to myself. I never vocalized that to anyone. But I've always wanted to be, to fulfill the most that I can in what I'm doing, whether it's in the company that I'm in or, you know, so I'm quite naturally competitive with myself. And so, when I went into that job, I immediately thought, well, where's the best company in electrical retail? And so I saw that there's a group called Dixon Stores Group that were the biggest in Europe. That's where I set my targets to work next. I didn't want to be as good as I could be in the smaller company I was at. I realized that actually there was a bigger company that did better things, where I could learn more and I could, you know, be more challenged. So I wanted to be there. So I spent about a year in my first job. Then I got there. And again, when I was there, I wanted to be at a level as quickly as I could. So I've always been very competitive from that perspective. Yeah.
And when did you get your first leadership role, and what were the challenges of it?
I think the first leadership role that I had, which was more around having to have a team and having, you know, managing people and leading a group to deliver more rather than do it myself, was in Carphone Warehouse, where I became head of the UK buying and, you know, had a team under me. And, you know, now when I look back on it, I realize how sort of little I knew. I was still a very functional doing things myself, very individual. I didn't really see the sort of the benefit of having the team really aligned. I was still very competitive and sort of driven by myself, so I didn't lead that team very well when I look back on it. But what I did do was sort of set a very kind of ambitious pace, and everyone sort of tried to follow and keep up. But it wasn't a very kind of kind leadership. It was sort of more, I'm going to crack on and do what I'm doing, and everyone else can sort of each themselves, and I'll sort of manage people a little bit along the way.
So what have you learned about leading since then, Duncan?
Nothing. That's still what I do. No.
Come on.
No. Really, it was probably the move to Australia and the roles at Coles that taught me, how to lead and take people on the journey more. And it was over that time at Coles that I sort of learned that. You kind of learn as you're doing it how important that is. I was still doing things very functionally and driving things individually probably into 3 or 4 years into my career at Coles, as the penny started dropping more and more, that in a large organization where you've got hundreds and hundreds of people, you can't do everything yourself. You've got to be able to influence and lead in a way that others are following and wanting to support, and that sometimes that takes a bit longer, but that it's critical that you have a wider leadership impact. So that was where I really started thinking about how do I get hearts and minds, how do I articulate my vision and ambition for what I want to deliver within the business, and then really be more involving with how other people can support that and want to be a part of it.
Yeah. And what did it feel like going from the individual focus to working through others? Once you had experienced both of those, what was the difference in terms of satisfaction or even just outcomes that you achieved?
Mm. Yeah, I think it's one of the most difficult things for anyone as they go through their career, going from that position where you're delivering results yourself and you're managing yourself, and it's much clearer, there's less ambiguity, there's less complexity, and you're getting you're getting quick results, you're being able to deliver things, to having to influence other people and not always getting what you want, and having to sort of face those setbacks. So for me, particularly because through my education, I was quite self-sufficient and quite autonomous, and I'm more introverted by my style. It was more difficult kind of getting results through other people and leading that way. So I think for anyone it's challenging, but you start when it really starts becoming impactful is when you do start getting those results that you wouldn't be able to achieve individually. It's when you start getting cultural changes, and you start getting you start seeing results that you haven't directly been a part of, and the penny really drops. Wow, this is far more gratifying, seeing a whole cultural change, or a much wider business initiative being landed through tens or hundreds of people, than it is getting your individual supplier negotiation or your set of results within your category that you ran or whatever that might be. It's far more inspirational to see something that's longer lasting and that other people are getting benefit from as well.
Yeah, great. And if we skip forward a few years then to now, or perhaps to July last year, when you moved into the CEO role at TerryWhite Chemmart, what was that transition? Was becoming the CEO different from a leadership point of view? Did you have to think differently about that and what that meant for you?
Yes, I did, because you have different accountabilities and expectations. I was lucky that I'd worked closely with the CEO of the business, and I've been in the industry for long enough that I was very familiar with the organization. I was familiar with, I'd been a part of setting the strategy for the business. So I knew our strengths and weaknesses very well, and where the opportunities were and what was expected of me. So it wasn't a new industry or, things where there are other challenges presented. But certainly I think the The biggest change is your feeling of whether you're going to be able to succeed. You know, I think it's that fear of failure and that fear of letting people down, or you know, feeling, am I really able to deliver at the next level? You know, for me, that's I think the thing that most sort of impacted me was, you know, am I going to be able to succeed then at the next level?
And when did you decide that you could, or that you had succeeded?
Well, the first there was a bit of a transition, and between, you know, knowing that I was going to be in the role and getting the role, there was a lot of change that was required, and that wasn't easy, that because it was sort of driving change without the status of the role, I suppose, or the you know, the ability to sort of directly have the role. And actually, one thing I did learn from that was that you can do a lot more than you think you can without the status of the role itself, or you know, the hierarchy of the role itself. And that's been an important learning for me, that sometimes your perception or your own optics of what that means versus your ability to change without that hierarchy. And now in the CEO role, I look at people in my direct reports or etc. that are holding back a bit, and I think, well, actually, you can influence far more than you think you can in roles further down the organisation. So that's been an important learning for me, one which I wish I'd known earlier.
But, before you took the role.
That's right. But no, so yeah, I guess, when did I sort of feel I was making the impact? The time I felt that I felt most comfortable in the role, we had a big conference in September, sort of 500-600 of our owners of the Terry White Kenmark Pharmacies, and Terry White was there as well. And one of the things that I'd heard before in passing, not directly to my face, was Duncan's clearly got the mind of the membership, but has he got the hearts? And you know, and I got up in front of that group with a little bit of that on my mind, you know, obviously, and I gave a sort of a speech, a sort of my introduction to the business, and what I was you know, what I was setting out to achieve, and I talked about sort of the industry and pharmacy, and the fact my dad was a pharmacist, and just why my heart was in this. And you know, I sort of finished that speech, and it was really well received. And afterwards, Terry and Rhonda, his wife, came up to me and said, you know, that you've just grabbed the hearts of everyone here, and that really meant a lot to me, because you know, the brand is sort of part of their legacy, but it was also, they were convinced that I had the right thinking, but were they convinced that I had the right leadership to sort of motivate and engage and take the group where it needed to get to in the next phase? That was really important. And I didn't feel that was just a comment. It was a sort of a really genuine, you know, bit of feedback, and from then on, that lifted my confidence. It was sort of, you know, first hurdle overcome, and that gave me confidence to really push on and move forward. And then since then, we up until you know, early in the new year, the results came through really strongly. We've had very good results, and that gives you confidence, you know, when you get that momentum.
Yeah, so there's sort of multiple levels of transition there that you were talking about. And for people who don't know, the Terry you were referring to is the Terry White, who's the founder of the organisation, and it can be really challenging taking on the organisation from the original founder with the name, etc. So that kind of shifting of your confidence, but almost the handing over of the banner.
Yeah, that's right.
Him. Sounds like it was an important part of that transition, which makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And so then COVID hit. So six months into the CEO role, and there's a huge challenge. What did you immediately sort of think in terms of what that might mean for you as well as for the organisation?
Yeah, I mean, when COVID hit, interestingly, the first signs of COVID were little things like changes in small changes in demand for products that we weren't expecting, etc. So we saw these early lead indicators, but the penny probably didn't really drop until we started seeing much bigger impacts. And look, I think for me, in our network of franchisees, it was actually quite a, when I look back on it, it was quite a sort of lonely and uncertain time, because I realized that our network were looking up to us and to me as to for guidance, and as a leadership group, we weren't sure of what was happening either. And we noticed that there were some there was some other guidance coming from the industry, and it wasn't great, actually. It was sort of a bit motherhood statements as opposed to providing kind of practical support and guidance, and suddenly we thought we'd better get our advisory group together and put a plan through. And really what happened was, in that early COVID piece, we went from being a bit unsure and speculating to getting our advisory group of pharmacy leaders together. There's 10 of us from across the states, and really discuss, well, what does this mean? What could it mean? What do our pharmacist owners need to know? What do the teams need to know? And suddenly we went from, being a bit floundering a little bit to being very clear on what are the practical steps that we need to make. And that day that we spent together, the next day, I got a COVID team together, and it just all came to life. We created a response plan, and the whole business shifted, and we went from being a little bit uncertain to having a very confident response, which the network found phenomenal. And actually, it gave us a strategic advantage to other brands in the market, because we provided such a strong and practical guide to how the pharmacies could respond. And, to the point where every day they were looking out for, our messages, the communications on what they needed to do and when, and how to manage the day-to-day within COVID.
And so that coming together for a day with the kind of key leaders and creating a plan, like, what was the magic in that shifted, the feeling from sort of uncertainty and not knowing what was going on to that's, quite a significant change in the way people saw you, and I guess their confidence about what was going to happen and how they'd be supported. What really was the difference in that?
Yeah, I think initially it was the realization of vulnerability from, we've got people in that advisory group that have been in pharmacy for 40, 50 years, and people with really strong experience of having been through all sorts of change. And in that room in the first hour, I could see that people were actually scared, as I say, very experienced people that have been on the front line of healthcare for a long time, and there was fear and uncertainty. And I think sharing that vulnerability and then discussing what will the rest of pharmacy need, what's going to be on their minds, what is just being very open about, what does everyone in this room feel, what are we most worried about, that really helps sort of cleanse that feeling of uncertainty to then move to sort of practicality and what was required. For me, it also, I realized there was a level of expectation on what I needed to do from that room. I had done an early video which went to the network just to say, we are sort of in this together, and don't worry, we're going to be providing guidance. And but I got some feedback in that meeting. It was too robotic. It wasn't heartfelt, and you know, some really clear feedback that I got, and I realized I wasn't quite doing what was needed. And I think everyone in the room felt the same. Everyone felt what we've done so far isn't enough, and it really spurred us all into action. And you know, from the day after that, as I said, that was our leadership group from a pharmacy level. But my team and the the franchisor group that we run really sort of sprung to action, and it led to quite a different change in our culture, you know, because people felt very proud of the role that they could play in supporting the pharmacies, and it's actually sort of helped our wider culture and purpose as a business, which I've been deliberate to foster.
And how do you see that playing out? What other things have you done over the last 6 months or so from a leadership point of view that, you know, you think have helped and continue to build on that?
Well, you know, like many businesses, the communication side, given we've got offices already around the country, but our two main offices in Brisbane and Melbourne means we're used to a level of, you know, remote communication. Right. But we really had to amplify far more regular contact to keep people connected. And that has actually led to, you know, more, I think, more connection across the group using that technology than maybe we would have done before. So for me, from a leadership perspective now, I feel I'm doing more communication updates than I did before COVID, which I'm finding quite useful. It's actually quite an efficient way of communicating what we're doing and getting feedback. I do a lot more virtual listening sessions, so I can cover more groups than I was before. So that changed, but I think probably the most, as I said before, the most powerful change in what COVID has provided is bringing network partners and the initiatives that we have done into our virtual updates that we do weekly, and really share the purpose of why we do what we're doing and how important everyone in the business is in providing that support. And for me, that culturally has been a big benefit and shift for us. So the positives out of COVID have definitely been the ability to reinforce the role we play in pharmacy, why that's so important, and how the network partners you know, benefit and you know, get strength from that. So we, as an example, we had our pharmacist of the year join our Friday update last week and share their experience through COVID. And, you know, it's just a great way of everyone in the business hearing, you know, how what they do supports effectively better health outcomes in Australia and sort of life and death situations sometimes, which you can't get more sort of purpose than that in driving, you know, culture and inspiration.
Yeah, fantastic. And the remote side of things means that with less travel, people are more used to coming together in forums and online forums. So that in some ways makes the communications much easier. Yeah,
definitely.
In terms of, if you think about back to July last year, and now here we are, what's one thing that you really didn't expect to happen that has been a key learning for you?
That's a good question. I think probably adaptability and resilience. You know, I mean, I think given just how much has changed and how many challenges have been put in front of people, I'll give you an example. We run because we're a strong business for for education and getting pharmacists together and providing support. We were due to have our sort of annual conference, which is a key thing for us in September. And obviously we couldn't go ahead with that. We pushed it back to November. We couldn't go ahead with that. And the business has now created a whole virtual event, you know, which is richer than and more useful and purposeful, I think, than what we had as a face-to-face event. And it's just one example of how the business has just changed, adapted, you know, supported through it. We've, you know, the number of initiatives, whether it's home delivery, whether it's, medication reviews that are done virtually. We've got a new weight management business that's been created out of COVID. So the adaptability, resilience of the teams and their, you know, their ability to think around these situations has been something that I wouldn't have expected 6 months ago.
Finally, to focus on what you're doing in terms of leadership culture and coaching culture in your organization, you've created a program around this thing called involving leadership. I mean, what's that all about? I think of that as a very sort of Duncan kind of leadership and focus on leadership. So can you explain what that is and why it's important to you?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I have a strong belief that everyone in an organization needs to feel involved, have a purpose. I don't know whether this comes from, you know, I'm a keen sort of sporting person. I love rugby union. The reason I love rugby union, one of the reasons, is that, you know, there's a role for everyone, whether you're short and fat, tall and fast, you know, whatever size, shape you are, there's a role for you within a rugby union team. But sports more generally for me is about, you know, how do you get great performance out of everyone being involved. And you know, one of my favourite leaders at the moment is Jurgen Klopp. I don't support Liverpool, but what I love about Jurgen Klopp is the fact that you watch him and he inspires in every conversation he has. And if you were to, I can bet you that if you were to speak to the people that serve the food in the restaurant there, or the people that do the ticket sales, and they would feel as inspired by him as, you know, the key strikers up front for Liverpool. And you will get the most out of an organisation by everyone feeling valued, everyone feeling involved, everyone feeling a common purpose. And that's what I would like to try and create. And I think that we've got a business that's so inspirational in the role that it provides in pharmacy and community health, that you've got a huge head start. You know, I've done roles which are far more difficult to drive a purpose in. But for everyone that wakes up in the morning and comes to work to support, you know, our pharmacies in Australia, they are, you know, there's a great sort of inspirational reason for what we do every day. So we've got a head start in terms of the purpose and the subject matter. But I also just would like everyone to get out of their roles what I get out each day, which is, if you're not having fun, if you're not feeling that you're part of where the business is going and, you know, playing a role and being involved, then you're not going to enjoy it and contribute as much as you could. So that's really the basis for involving leadership. I guess it's sort of, I'm not a massive fan of hierarchy. I always sort of think, well, I'd rather be a part of a team than sort of be part of an army, I suppose. I like that concept.
And in terms of going back to your early experiences of leadership and being very focused on the individual you and feeling competitive, I mean, how have you seen that change by contrasting it with the idea of involving leadership?
Yeah, I'm still extremely competitive, and I'm very results driven, but I've definitely I definitely try and do that through the team now. I'm I give people a lot of room to lead and manage their own teams, you know, and I don't manage people closely. I try to set expectations, and that's how I like to be treated as well. So, I'm still, you know, I still put a lot of discipline and rigor around results, and I keep close to that. But I, you know, I don't manage people through the results. You know, the results is the outcome, and I look very closely with, I mean, every Friday for 3 hours, every Friday I go through with my finance team and each of the business leads, you know, the results and where their numbers are. But I do that in a way which isn't telling them how to go and do what they then need to do. It's about, okay, you know, they are the results. How do we improve them? It's up to you now to come back next week, looking at whether we've done that or not. You know, and so it's very much, it's very much down to the team to be able to deliver those.
Yep. So we're just about out of time, and I wonder whether you might, there's something you would like to have said that you haven't had the opportunity to say around leadership and lessons about leadership, or even if you'd like to sort of project out and think about what the next 12 months might hold for you and Terry White, Ken Mark, from a leadership perspective.
I mean, in terms of the next 12 months, we have gone through so much change that actually we are starting to get the most momentum sort of as a business that we've had really in the last 12 months. And whilst COVID did take a little bit of wind out of the sails, I believe strongly that it will come out of it with a greater sort of need for the role that our brand and where we are can play. So, yeah, for me, the momentum's there. It's nice to be in a position where what we planned and what we've put into place sort of is starting to come to fruition, and it feels like the strategy is really working. So, that's been a huge benefit. The biggest thing now that I am enjoying, which I probably wouldn't have imagined saying 5 years ago or even 3 years ago, is the thing I enjoy most is seeing my team challenged, developing, engaging, giving feedback like that. That's, I never thought that would be the case, but I enjoy that people side of things more than I probably ever thought that I would do.
Mm. Well, that's good. That makes leading all the more satisfying. So thank you very much, Duncan. I really appreciate your time talking about your career highlights and challenges and focus on leadership. That's been fantastic. Thanks so much.